Hey, this is Drew, and you're listening to Tobin Tonight.
So the first thing I want to do is welcome you to Tobin Tonight. I want to start by asking you, like, how did you get into, like, music? Like, who were some of your influences? And take us way back to, I guess, the whole in essence of it all.
Okay. It started, I can even go before in essence. I grew up a really shy kid. You know, I used to stutter horribly as a child. So, you know, my older brothers used to clown me. And you know how you are with your brothers. You get clowned around and stuff. So my older brother, I was watching a Jackson 5 performance of them doing My Girl when okay. Michael was really young. And I was around maybe 9. And I was just kind of singing along with it. And my older brother, Rick, was like, kind of overheard me. And he's like, Andrew, you have a voice. Like, that actually sounds pretty good. You know, and that's maybe one of the only positive things as an older brother that he's ever said to me. That's kind of where it started. Like, that's where I was like, oh, wow, my older brother says I can sing. You know, maybe I have something here. And that's what planted the little seed. But it wasn't until I was around 15, I did a talent show at St. Francis Xavier, big up to Xavier in Mississauga. I was insanely nervous. So when I actually signed up for this talent show, I was like, oh my God, like, what am I doing? Like, can I even do this? Like, what the hell am I to even do this? And I was doing a New Edition song, Can You Stand the Rain, with two other singers, but I had to walk on singing the Ralph Tresvant part. So they were already on stage, but I had to walk on singing, 'cause I need somebody who will stand by me through the good times. So I'm walking on, my face is shaking, my legs are trembling, but this is the first time my peers in school has ever heard me sing. They heard the first couple notes and realized that, yo, this is Andrew Grange walking out right now. And the school went nuts. They went crazy. So that's kind of where my confidence came from. I didn't really know until that talent show. And then it was after that show that Oba Hyacinth, which his name was Touch in essence, he's the one that came to me first and was like, yo, I want to put this group together, you know, like, what do you think type of thing? Let's put some guys together, kind of like New Edition. So me being the shy kid, but still wanting to sing, I was like, well, this might be a little easier with a bunch of guys with me. You know, I'm not just by myself. So that's kind of why I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's put this group together. So it was myself and Touch who searched for the other members. So that's kind of how it came together. We did the following year, we did the talent show at Xavier and we tore it down. From then, that was when we solidified the five members of In Essence. And then it took about, that was 16, so it took about 9 years for us to get a deal.
Okay.
We got signed to BMG after doing, we did a song with Ghetto Concept called Rest in Peace. So Ghetto Concept was signed to BMG. We weren't signed at this time. And Glenn Lewis was actually the original singer on the song, but he had just got signed in the US with Motown.
Okay.
So they didn't want him to be on a track with, you know, so-called gangsters like Ghetto Concept.
Yeah.
So they were like, you know, that doesn't really suit your image, you know, so, you know, we don't want you to be on that song. So they had to pull Glenn off of it. And that's when Quadro from Ghetto Concept, we were at Humber College together doing music, the music industry course. That's when he approached me. He's like, yo, you know, we had Glenn on our first single. He's like, you know, do you think you guys could replace him and sing this chorus? So he played it for me. I'm like, yo, of course we can do that. Like, hell yeah. You guys are signed to BMG. Like, hell yeah. Let's do it. So it was after that song. And then we recorded that song with them. And that ended up being their second single off their album. And we were at the video shoot with them where we were featured in the video for the song's called Rest in Peace. And Lisa Zabitnu and Keith Porteous, which was the president and vice president of BMG at the time, they were on set So we were like, yo, let's corner them and like sing for them.
Yeah,
let's like, yeah, you know, let's get at them somehow. Yeah. And we cornered Lisa and Keith. We sang for them a cappella. Shortly after that, they got us to BMG for just a meeting.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, let's see what you guys can do type of thing. So they didn't sign us just right out the gate. They're like, let's see what you guys can do. Cause we're like, you know, we write our own stuff and, you know, we're like, so they're like, okay, let's see what you guys can do type of thing. So they put us in the studio with a couple producers and we came up with a song called IE, which was turned out to be our first single. So we were actually shooting the video for IE and we still hadn't signed with BMG yet, but they loved the song so much that they're like, let's put this out right now. Lisa's a bit new's daughter, who was 13 or 14 at the time, heard the song and was in love with the song. So she's like, oh my God, my daughter loves this. Let's put this out.
Yeah.
So we're literally shooting the video. We shot the video in Cuba. So we're like, we're unsigned still, but now we're in Cuba shooting our first video. Like, we didn't really know, are they signing us? Like, what's going to happen? We didn't really know, but we're like, but we're shooting the video. So things must be, and they're paying for it. So things must be on the up and up. So yeah, we came back, we shot that video and it wasn't, and that song just went crazy on radio back then. It was on the set of our second single, a song called Friend of Mine, that we won the Juno for, actually. That was when Lisa's a Bit New brought the bottle of, I think it was Dom Perignon, and brought the contracts and presented us with our deal. So that's where it began. And then, you know, we won the Juno for that album. BMG kind of, you know, they had their urban roster. So they had us, they had Ghetto Concept, they had Keisha Shante, they had Sean Desmond, all at that same time. And it was crazy because we won the Juno and we started working on our second album. And during the wrapping up of us recording the second album was when they dropped the whole urban division. We literally got an email saying BMG has opted to completely drop the whole urban division. So they dropped us, Keisha Shante, Ghetto Concept, Sean Desmond, all of us at the same time basically got dropped. So that's when I was starting to think, you know, I'm like, my daughter was very young at that time. And I was like, yo, I may have to start looking at this solo thing. Like, I may have to start. It's not something as a shy kid. And I didn't want to be solo. I didn't want to be by myself. But I'm like, yo, I got to figure out what I'm going to do, like, for myself and my family type of thing. After we got dropped, it was crazy. We got a tour in Germany. After we got dropped. So maybe a week after we got dropped, we got a tour in Germany. That whole trip in Germany was like, all of us were kind of like quiet on the plane. You know what I mean? Kind of just in our own world. Like, we're all deep in our thoughts. Like, what the hell are we going to do when we get back? Yeah. You know, we have no deal type of thing. So that Germany trip was really weird. We were like arguing and it was just like, oh, what are we going to do when we get back? It was just a bunch of craziness. So we got back. And we had a couple corporate gigs set up for us, but there was nothing really happening. So I started recording my solo album, not really knowing what I was going to do. Just went in the studio and just started working.
Yeah.
And Ivan Berry, who was working with In Essence, who used to be at BMG, he's a big label exec. Shout out to Ivan, by the way. He found, and there was an independent label named Street Quality Records. And they were looking to blow an artist up. They had Duncan McRae was this 26-year-old billionaire whose father, his grandfather had passed away and left him all of his money. I think it was Globe Media he owned.
Okay.
So he was just a very wealthy man that left this to his 26-year-old kid. He was more in tech and in computers and stuff. He didn't know anything about the music industry, but he wanted to have fun. He's like, you know, I'm this kid. I want to have fun. I want to open a record label.
Yeah.
So I want to find an artist that I can just shoot straight through the stratosphere. We'll put all the money into them and we're going to like, let's take this there type of thing. So Ivan Berry approached me and was like, this label's looking for someone, a vocalist, blah, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, let's set up a meeting. And it's funny because they first met with Masari. I don't know if you remember the singer Masari from Toronto. They met with him before me.
Okay.
And they turned him down. So I was like, okay, they must really want a singer. I'm like, okay, all right. So when I met with them, they were impressed. They flew me out to Victoria and did this weird personality test on me. I guess, yeah, like, I don't know, rich Illuminati people do this maybe. I don't know. It was a weird questionnaire thing. You choose different colors and it shows your personality, I guess. It was very weird.
I've done those before.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about. So it was weird, but they ended up signing me. Throughout that whole time, they signed me, but they fired Ivan Berry as my manager. So now I'm in there kind of by myself, wondering, when are they gonna drop me too? Like, what's going on here? This is kind of weird. They had promised me a lot of things, like, you know, we want you to get features with Drake, we want T.I., we want Eminem, we want, okay, you know, the best of the best type of things. So I'm like, yo, like, I think this is gonna be my deal. Like, this is gonna be my break, finally, a proper deal. It was $1 million marketing budget, and the advance was like $250,000 at that time. I was like, whoa, like, my mind was blown out of, like, I was like, what the hell, this is crazy. So I recorded the album, and they brought in an A&R from the UK. I'm not even gonna say the guy's name, but as soon as he stepped in, everything just started going, everything just started falling. He was like, okay. Oh, he was complaining about the budget that they had for me, and, oh, I know members of the Pussycat Dolls, and they're getting less of an advance than you guys are giving Drew, and why are you, he doesn't need features, he doesn't need this, and everything just started to, like, literally start to disappear before my eyes.
Yeah.
So I hit up Duncan, I sent Duncan an email. I don't know if I ever told the story like this, but I hit up Duncan, I emailed him, I'm like, bro, like, be careful with who you're hiring. Because I don't want someone to just work with you to take advantage of you and your and who you are. I was trying to look out for him. And it was maybe a week after I sent that email, I got a call from my lawyer, Paul Sanderson. He was like, Drew, you should probably sit down. No. I was like, sit down, what's up? He's like, you should probably take a seat. You know, like, we have to have a talk.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm like, what's up? I had no clue, like, caught me completely, blindsided me. Duncan mentioned the email to Seb that you sent him. They're all very disappointed. They're all very upset. And they're opting to just end this deal. So they stopped the deal right there, right then and there. I hadn't even got my first. I was supposed to get in like something like 8 or 9 G's monthly allowance. And I hadn't even got my first allowance yet.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're pulling out of this deal. So I literally felt like, you know, I just jumped off a cliff or something. Because the album was ready to go. The album was done. My lawyer was like, there's a silver lining, he said. Those were his words. There's a silver lining. I'm like, okay, what's that? Because they had spent $1 million on my album.
Yeah.
So they're like, they're just going to give you the album. They don't want anything. They're just going to give it to you.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're just going to give me, they just spent $1 million production. We worked with Evan Bogart, big songwriters. I worked with Rihanna and, you know, Beyonce. Like, we worked with all these huge people on this album. And they're like, they're just going to give it to me? Yeah. They're like, yeah, they just want to wash their hands of the music industry. It's not as fun as they thought it would be. Yeah, and they just want to wash their hands of this. And a million to Duncan was nothing. It was like, whatever.
Yeah.
So I went back to Universal, sat down with the A&Rs at Universal, played them the album, and they loved it. They loved the first single, which was Getting It In was the first single, and the second single was She Can Ride, which are both now gold singles, my only two gold singles that I've ever had in my career. They signed me to a licensing deal, so it wasn't as, you know, as good a deal as I had, obviously.
Yeah.
But they signed a licensing deal, and based on just them believing in that, I got all the other Juno nominations for the album. I got the gold records. And from there, it just kind of, like, it's still a sad story in a way, but it still kind of catapulted me and set me up for what was to come. After that, you know, I got to tour. I toured with Sean Paul on his Full Speed tour, which was amazing. I got to hang out with Future Fambo, who did Rum and Red Bull, big dancehall song. So I got to kind of be in that mix. Fast forward to 2021, I released the album that came after that, which was The Rebirth, MMXS. we're now at 3 million streams right now since 2021. So yeah, that's kind of the story in a nutshell.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4Kids Flashback.
I want to ask you, because I think it's interesting, like with the whole story aspect, but like the way that when you said it's no longer fun for them anymore, like when he first kind of came to you, was there any kind of hesitation when you kind of realized like this guy at first is like, it's, he inherited his he inherits money, but it's like, he's just doing it kind of like for fun. And then immediately it's like, oh, it's not fun for me. I'm out. Like, I'm 32, but I mean, if someone gave me so much money and I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, I'd still think I want to hire people that know about it rather than me just go head on.
Like, exactly.
I could be like, I don't know what the show's called, but it's like, I think Ryan Reynolds is in it and they basically have a soccer team or a football team. It's like, if they gave me that money, I'd still be like, okay, that's great. But I don't want to like, you know, go bankrupt. So I'm going to hire the right people so that I can make more money.
Exactly.
Not just be like, oh, it's fun. I think it's fun. Let me be the head coach. It's like, and then you suck. And then it's like, well, shit, where do I go from there? It's like nowhere, because no one wants to work here now because you've totally taken what was probably here.
Yeah.
And we could have went up here, but we're down now here. And no one wants to go down here to bring it back up here.
Exactly. And that's the thing too. They had a couple other artists that were on the roster at that time. Big producer, Alex Greggs, who did NSYNC's No Strings Attached, almost 12 songs on that album. They had signed him as their in-house producer. He was going to put out an album kind of like a Timbaland type of super producer album with a bunch of different artists. After they dropped me, the rest of the artists just basically got dropped after that, and now they're not in the music industry at all. So
yeah,
it was just it was a weird situation. It kind of came and went so fast, but it's so true that things happen for a reason, because that weird situation kind of set me up for where I am now. So at the time I was like pulling my hair out. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, maybe I should have just shut my mouth. You know what I mean? And didn't complain or didn't say anything. But I feel like the end result probably would have ended up being the same.
It maybe would have happened later. Down the road. Yeah.
But yeah. And it maybe could have been even worse, you know? So I think God kind of has a plan. And as much as that at that time, it hurt me like deeply. I'm glad it happened the way it did and when it did. So man, it's crazy.
I feel like it's the same way as like, so in school, when we did internships, that was like the same thing. Like I would be bouncing around from internship to internship. And it's not like you were, it's not necessarily that you didn't know what you were doing. It's just like, I'm a kid from Newfoundland. So like to do things in Toronto when you were like Global Toronto, they're like, go down to like this place and interview people. I'm like, about what? Like, I'm not from here. And then they're just like, just go find something. I'm just like, oh, thankful. So great. Like, yeah. And then you'd come back and be like, buddy, I don't know what you want me to do. And then they'd look at you and be like, so you've never been here before? I'm like, no, that's what I've said on day one. Like, you know, I kind of expected, like, let me use my skills as a conversationalist. You tell me what I need to do. I will do it, but just let me know what it is. Don't just be like, yeah, go out and just like, go to like the deepest like pits of Toronto and try to find. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
so then when
goodness.
You like hop around and then like you'd go back to your school and then they'd be like, so like, what are you doing? Like, we need something to show that you graduated. I'm just like, I really don't know. I'm just like, I don't think my skills are getting used here. So then this whole concept of doing a podcast came up and essentially like same thing. Like I felt like, oh shit, I'm failing. I'm not like, this is not what I want to do.
Right.
And then when I decided to do this, I was like, okay, like it works. Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah. But,
you know, who knows? Like, if I had to go their way, maybe like 5 years from now, you could still be at like a global Toronto or city, whatever. But you'd kind of be like, dude, I'm not using my abilities.
Right.
Like, I'm using your abilities, but it's not making sense to me.
Right.
it's like the guy that's like, it's like in hockey, if you're like at the side of the net and you just tap in goals, it's like, well, you got 20 goals this season. I'm like, but you do know I have a wrist shot, right? They're like, nah, we don't want your wrist shot.
Don't use that.
I'm like, okay, I feel great that I got 20 goals, but at the same point, it's like, they're not my goals. They're tackles.
Right, I'm not utilizing my strength. Exactly.
Yeah, someone just be like, just take the money. I'd just be like, what money? I don't get paid for tap-ins. I get bonuses, I guess. I want to ask you, like, because I have two older brothers. So when you said earlier on, like, you had a brother that kind of hyped you up saying, like, oh, yeah, it's like you have such a great singing voice. Did anyone else ever tell you have a singing voice? Because my older brothers would probably say to me, like, oh, Brian, like, you're such a great hockey player. And then next minute they'd be like, all right, they'd bring over their friends, watch my brother think he's a good hockey player. Like, you know? Yeah. And then I'd be in the background, like, I'd be like, yeah, I scored. And they'd be like, see, it took him 20 minutes on open net to score a goal. I told you.
It was, I mean, that's kind of where it began. Like, there was, after he told me that I could sing, there was actually a church talent show that I had entered in when I was 9 or 10. And I rehearsed for about 6 months. And then when the show came about, I didn't do it because I was too shy. I was too terrified. So that was like the actual first time I was supposed to do it. And I just couldn't. My nerves would not let me do it. But throughout that time, rehearsing and, you know, certain other family would kind of overhear me, or, you know, my mom would like force me to sing for my uncles or something. And I would like just barely be able to do it. And they're like, yo, no, Andrew, you have a voice. You have, you know, work on it. Like, don't be so shy. And over that time, it started to like, my confidence started to grow, you know, throughout 9, 10, 11. But it wasn't until high school that I actually got the actual nerve to stand up in front of an audience. And bro, I wish I could, like, my face was literally shaking. Like, I was a mess. And I had to walk out while I was singing. So my knees are trembling. Like, it was bad. It was bad. But as soon as I heard the audience, it just confirmed. I completely got this sense of like, okay, all right, maybe I have something here.
How do you, like, because there are people out there that could be like in different realms. Like, I know I come from a public speaking background. Now, I know as a kid, they're just trying to encourage you to be able to speak in front of an audience. Like, when you're in, I think they didn't introduce it in grade 5, like public speaking.
Right.
It didn't have to be too long. Just get up there and do like 2 minutes of a poem or whatever. And then like, as you get older, it's like, if you're talented at it, they want you to come up with a speech. And then like, so I think it's a good kind of skill to have, but it is still like, I find it so odd because like I could be a great public speaker, but then when it comes to like, say the ladies, it's almost it's like, but Brian, like you can speak in front of an audience that's full of girls or women.
Right. Why can't you speak for like, one girl?
Yeah. I was just like, yeah, but see the difference is one-on-one, I don't have a script. Like when you're doing public speaking, you can jot it down and you're like, okay, I can sense the audience is going to this one. It's like you go up to a girl and be like, man, that's a great blue dress, and then they'll just be like, shut the fuck up, and then
get away from me.
I was not expecting that in my bingo cards of responses. I had nice
prepared.
Thank you, nice blue blazer, or like, you know, do you want to talk? But no, not shut the fuck so, but like, how do you essence, I guess, like get over the stutter and a little bit of like just getting your confidence? Because I know it's one thing to actually say like, I'm going to do it. And then you actually get up and do it and then be like, okay, I got to keep doing this. Like, where do you eventually turn the switch to be like, I got to try?
After like my brother kind of let me know that I had something there, I started to really just compare myself to other singers. And I think hearing Michael as a kid, for me, that blew my mind. I was like, wow, a kid can be a recording artist. I didn't even think that was a thing. And then when I saw New Edition and I heard Ralph Tresvant and his high pitched voice, I was like, wow. Like, I started just to compare myself a lot. And it was really the feeling, man. It was the feeling I got when I went on stage. That was the ultimate, like, real engine. That was like, oh, I gotta get that feeling again. I need it again.
Adrenaline.
I was addicted to that feeling. Yeah. And I think that's what kind of was more powerful than my fear, was my love for that feeling. You know, and even to this day, I still get the same feeling.
In your essence, that would be like, that's a good thing. But like for me, it's the only time that I can kind of compare to that in some relevance is with hockey. And I play like ball hockey goalie. I will come home with bruises on my arm, complaining that like, oh, it hurts, it's sore. But then the next week I'm back at it goalie and someone's just like, what is wrong with you? I'm just like, I don't know. It's like, just take a week off, it's okay. But then when you get that like text message where it's just like, dude, we don't have a goalie for tonight, it's like, wow, I could be a hero and show up and everyone loves you, but then after you're just like, is it worth it? And then next week it's like, yes, I guess it is worth it.
Yeah.
Now when you were saying the song Getting It In, like I remember listening to that, I think I was maybe in, I want to say either high school or university. So it's either like just ending high school or just starting university.
Yeah.
But man, every time I turned on a radio station, it was on. And I was just like, okay, it came to the point, like I work. So when I was in college, and we worked in a radio station, you don't realize people in radio probably have heard the song that you like. Like you probably listen to like when Miley Cyrus comes out with a song and you hear it for about a week's time, but you've only probably heard it five times.
Yeah.
That person that's in that like DJ booth has heard it 25 times.
Yeah.
In a day. Yeah. So when you're going to them going like, hey man, I really like this song, they just like come into the car like, no. And I'm just like, why? You don't like the song? You're like, I've heard it again. Too much.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, have you had people come up to you when like that song first came out and like give you kind of like where they were to when it came out, their memories of it? Cause I'll give you mine. When I first heard it, at first I was like, oh, this is like a good, like, you know, fun night out. Like I want to listen to this when I go out. And then like years later, when I listen to it, I'm just like, it still comes back to mind where I'm like just driving around Ottawa or on a bus in Ottawa. And I'm just like, like this is going to be a good night. It's almost like the song, like Neo and Pitbull. I think it's like, Give Me Everything Tonight. Like, it's like give you that kind of vibe. And I'm just
huge
like,
huge song. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I want to have a good time tonight. I want to party.
Yeah.
Now when I'm like 30 out, I'm just still like, I want to go home and take a nap. But like later on, like, can play this song and I will be up and at him. But like, have you had people come up to you and give you an experience of like where they were to when the song came out? And like, I don't know, it was like flashback back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? That song, I wrote that song when Jersey Shore, that show. So that's where that getting it in term, that's where, how it got in my head. It was from that show.
Okay.
Right? So I had people on, it was that and LMFAO was actually big around that time too.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what was in my mind at the time when I did that. So a lot of people hit me up and say, every time I hear that song, I think of Jersey Shore. Or I think of LMFAO. What was their song? Party Rockin' Tonight. Right? Because I was like, there's a lyric in the song where I talk about party rocking. So it just showed where my mind was at. But those are the kind of stories I've gotten. Like that brings me back to Jersey Shore.
As long as we stay party rocking, this night will never end.
That's it right there.
We'll be getting it in. It's catchy. It stays in your mind.
Yeah, and it was very influenced by, like, I don't know if you remember the start, but it's like, So that was taken from Usher. I'm drawing a blank of the song right now, but there was a big Usher song that started very, very similar. Down, 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 down. I can't remember the song.
No, I know what you're talking about.
But it was very influenced by that also. So, a lot of people have said, yo, this makes me think of the Usher song. I'm like, yeah, I got the idea from the intro from him. Yeah, man.
You know, you go back in time and you listen. Like, I've had this conversation with a buddy of mine the other day where it's like certain peak songs. Like, I think it's like Starships by Nicki Minaj. There's like, there is like LMFAO. There's songs by them, and there's one that I can't remember. I think it's like 3HOH3 or whatever. And then it's like, there's a line and it's like, if you got beef, or it's like something about tell your boyfriend that I'm a vegetarian. And then it's like something like, if, and like when you're like when you're a kid listening to that, you're just like, oh, bars. And when you're older, you're just like, you're like, that makes no sense. If you said that in a fight to someone, it's like, yeah, tell your boyfriend if you got beef. I'm not scared because I'm a vegetarian. And he'd be like, he's still going to beat the shit out of you.
You get slapped like, even harder.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, as it, like I look at that now and there's music that I'm just still like, oh, like this is good music. Like Katy Perry's like Dark Horse. Like you go back because you remember that as a certain period of time. Yeah. Now there's kids that find songs on like TikTok, Instagram, and you might like the 30-second sound bit that they use, but then go listen to the whole song. And I'm just still like, I kind of only like the 30-second sound bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's probably why you used it. Like you go down now on like iTunes, and if you find that song that you like, you watch how fast that circle goes where it's just like, okay, here's your demo. And I'm just like, hold on a second. If I go down to an Ed Sheeran song, it like slowly does the circle where it's like, we're going to give you a little bit more.
Right.
It's almost like they're like, we know Ed Sheeran's good, so we're going to let you decide. But then it's like the one that's on TikTok, like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, get bye, quick, before you change your mind.
But, yeah.
Hello, I'm Wendy Mesley.
There you are. A lot of people have wondered what happened to you.
I could say the same about you, Maureen Holloway.
Well, here we are, a few years after we left our previous jobs. We've been busy.
We have a podcast. I know, you're thinking, who doesn't? But ours is really good. It's called Women of Ill Repute.
We don't just talk to women, though. Just the most interesting people you'd ever want to meet.
Artists, musicians, comedians, doctors.
Activists, convicts, writers, sex workers.
Drop some names.
Jan Arden, Pamela Anderson, Bruce Coburn.
Samantha Irby, Louise Penny, Marilyn Dennis, Colin Mochrie.
We laugh, we cry, sometimes we argue. Come and find us.
Our website is womenofillrepute.com.
Or try Apple, Spotify, and all the podcast places.
So now you know what happened to us. Women of Ill Repute.
In a world now where you see TikTok, Instagram, and like, you know, that's somehow how you discover artists now.
Yeah.
How do you find that that time shift has changed? Like, do you now market differently?
I haven't really made that transition into TikTok. I've been trying to over the last little years. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like the way just the music industry in general, I feel like I'm kind of on the outside now, kind of looking in. And that's kind of why I've made these changes in my career. Like even putting together this Soul Nostalgic residency that I'm doing now, that idea came from me thinking like, okay, I gotta change my approach to this music industry because number one, music has lost its value.
I agree.
Music has lost its value. And I can debate that with anyone. Like, the fact that you can get on Spotify and get a membership on Spotify for whatever the price is, I've never paid for Spotify, so I don't even know.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But the fact that you can pay and a certain amount and get all the songs in the world that you want shows the lack of value that music has today. The fact that they can pay artists a percentage of a cent per stream, that's what they pay us, percentage of a cent, 0.00134, whatever ridiculous number that Universal, because Universal owns Spotify. This is a number that they came up with. We're going to give the artist this. Like, it's literally taking a penny and cutting it in pieces. And here's a piece of a penny for someone streaming your song. So even if you're the biggest fan of an artist, you could be the biggest fan of, say, me. You're my biggest fan. For me to make any money off of you, you have to stream my song thousands of times.
Yes.
Thousands. For me to really make anything that could actually pay my bills.
Yeah.
Literally thousands. And you could try as a fan. I love this song. I'm gonna play it 100 times today. It's still not enough to help your favorite artist. You know what I'm saying? It's actually really messed up. So I was like, what can I do now to still do my passion and actually make money and actually live off of my passion. Because artists out here, like, man, I feel sorry for brand new artists right now coming out to try and start their career and, you know, trying to get streaming and getting on playlists. Like right now, I think I'm on 3,000 playlists on Spotify. I'm on 3,000 playlists on Spotify and at over 3 million streams, and it's not doing anything for me as an artist when it comes to actual dollars and cents. Most artists won't really talk about this because most artists want to act like we're all balling out of control. We're making all this money. We're not. We're not. Artists are not making money from streaming.
Artists got, like, I guess, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's like, because back in the day, like, you could go on, like, the way that you would get someone like myself to watch you if you're, like, 10 or 12, you'd see yourself on, like, a Much Music. You'd see yourself on, like, radio station because you're listening to it on a way to, like, soccer, hockey, bowling, whatever.
Exactly.
And then it'd be, like, a countdown. And it's like, by the way, before we get to, like, number 10 on the countdown, here is this artist.
This new artist.
And then you'd be, like, and then you'd get a little bit of an interview and you're, like, okay, I'm only getting a snippet. But now I want more. Like,
yes.
I want, so where am I getting more? Now it's almost like you go on all these apps. And it's like, buddy, I'm beat out. Like, I know your whole story in like 5 seconds. It's like, it's like TV shows. Like, you used to have to sit down. I'll give you an example, like wrestling. So I was big on wrestling as a kid.
Yeah.
You would see Stone Cold Steve Austin stun somebody, Triple H come out and hit him with a sledgehammer. And then you'd hear like JR go like, oh my God, what's going to happen next week on Raw? You're like, yeah, what is going to happen next week on Raw?
And you wait.
Yeah. Now it's almost like I can go back and like you watch like SmackDown and they give you highlights in real time where you don't even have to watch it. You just kind of like, I haven't watched SmackDown in like, I'd say 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, but I can go on my like phone and it's like, oh, The Rock. Okay. And I don't have to sit down and wait for The Rock. Now I can just be like, yeah, give me 2 hours and then they'll show the clip of The Rock and what he said.
Exactly. Even with TikTok also, just social media in general, we've killed the mystery of artists. Like, there's no more mystery. I can go on their page and watch them brush their teeth. I can go on their page and watch everything they did over the past 2-3 months. There's no mystery left. Yeah. And as much as there's pros to social media for artists, that we can hit the masses very quickly, but we can hit the masses very quickly to the point where the masses are like, oh yeah, I heard your single, the second that you dropped it, or I saw the behind the scenes of you in the studio while you were making that single. So by the time you put it out, I don't care. Right. And it just keeps lowering the value to the point where there's
new artists out there that I like follow on like Spotify. And like the thing that I really don't like that they do on Instagram, like I'm not an artist myself, but it's just to, like, they'll tease a song for a fucking week.
Yes.
And then they'll give you that same snippet and they're like, they'll be in their car. They'll be like, all right, you guys, this song comes out Friday. And I'm just like, man, this is all fucking pre-recorded, whatever shit. And then when the song comes out Friday, you've already pieced together all the segments.
Yeah.
And then when it comes out, yes, you download it. You listen to it like nonstop for 2 days. And then by the time it hits radio, or if they're lucky, if it hits radio within a week or two, you're like, dude, I've heard it, skip.
I'm over
and then
it.
And then they're like, how come it's not doing so well? It's like, because we've heard it. The attention span is gone.
Yeah.
Where when you came out with an album, like you might have 2 or 3 singles. But then the person would buy the album to admire the rest of your art. Like, you're right.
Work,
and then you have to wait another 1 or 2 years before you get the next like Backstreet Boys song. So now you're ready. You were ready for it. But in a world today, I think the Backstreet Boys came out with like a holiday song like a year or two ago. I had it. I still listen to it, but I'm just like, man, in today's world, that's tough. Like, you have to already be made so people can be like, get it. Like, if the Backstreet Boys came out today, I kind of feel bad for them because it's just like, guys, we spent a year making this album and you've listened to it in a day. And now you're asking us to make another album.
Yes.
Like, calm down.
Like that's really where it is right now. And that's kind of why exactly what I was saying was why I'm like, okay, I need to figure something else out because this just is not working for me. I can't keep up with this. Like the last album I put out in 2021, the amount of money that I spent to promote this album. It's insane. Like, this is the only industry where you have to pay to work. You don't work and get paid. You pay to work. Like, to get on the biggest playlists, like, for one single, my song YNF that I put out on my last album, I paid $13,000 to get on playlists.
Yeah.
That's insane. It's crazy. It's nuts because, okay, I put $13,000. When am I seeing that $13,000 back off of streams? When you're only making a percent, you never seeing that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I was like, okay, what can I do? And I started to pay attention to like the Vegas residencies.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, obviously Usher's Vegas residency was massive. But back in the day, people looked at residencies as your career is over if you're now going to Vegas for a residency. Like, you're coming to the end of your career.
Yeah.
Now that's not really the case. It's almost like it's now an outlet, especially for artists from Usher's era, my era, you know, eras like New Edition. They got the residency in Vegas also. And it seems like Vegas is really opening up to, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s era to really give these artists their flowers.
Yeah.
I started to notice that. I'm like, okay, well, I'm like, shoot, I want to go to Vegas and see Usher. I want to fly to Vegas and spend that money and pay for the hotel and pay to go see New Edition. I want to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, a lot of people must want to do that and can't do that because it's not cheap. It's expensive to have to go there, buy the tickets, get your flight, hotel, food, everything. It's expensive. So I'm like, what if I could offer something like that here, where I can give people the authentic New Edition songs, I can give them the authentic Usher songs with the full soul R&B band, with the choreography, but with the Vegas feel where we're all in black and white tuxedos. You know, we have a nice brass section, you know, where people can come and have a nice dinner and watch an authentic R&B soul show. I'm like, I think people will, instead of paying hundreds or even thousands to go to Vegas, I think they'll spend, you know, $100, you know, $70 to $100 to have a nice dinner and take in an hour and a half authentic soul show that's done with a sophistication that's, you know, makes you feel like this Vegas kind of feel. I'm like, I think people will pay for that. I think I can make some money off that.
Yeah.
And me and my fiance talked about it. And at first the idea was I was going to do like performances dressed in their outfits. So if I was doing like, say, a BBD song, I'd wear like, you know, the snapback backwards and the overalls and, you know, all that kind of look. And I'm like, I don't know if that'll work. Some people might think I look like, you know, I look like a rapper or I look too street, you know, or I look too. So I was like, nah, I'm going to have to clean it up. And we were kind of throwing around ideas. And I saw the Justin Timberlake suit and tie video.
Okay.
Where it's black and white, and they're all in the tuxedos, just the black and white tuxedos with the bow tie. And they were in like a supper club type of setting in that video. And I was like, yo, it looks so slick. Like, they look classy, but there's still like a Rat Pack kind of edge to it. You know what I mean? They're smoking cigarettes. It's kind of like this, had this edge that I feel like as an R&B lover, that's kind of what I loved about R&B, was that they were singing love songs, but there was an edge, like Jodeci had an edge to them. You know what I mean? Like, but they were still singing real love songs. So that's when the idea started to grow. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to shoot a commercial. I'm going to get my favorite director, which is Charlton from Toronto. Big up to Charlton. I got my favorite choreographer, Mark Samuels, who worked with Luther Brown, who works with everyone from Janet Jackson to Michael Jackson. You know, I pulled in all the people that I've met over my career and was like, I pitched them the idea. I'm like, yo, I don't have the money to pay you guys your full amount. I don't have the budget to be able to, Charlton, I don't have 10 grand to pay you for a video, bro. I don't, but I need your help. And I really think this can be something. And based on my passion of the way I pitched it to them, and Mark was like, Drew, I don't know, but he loves that era. I'm like, picture it, bro. You have to really picture this. Picture, you know, New Edition choreography, you know, with the mic stands and the tuxedos and, you know, just that real authentic band. I didn't even have a band then. I was like, I'm going to put this band together. I don't know how, but I'm going to do it. And thank God they believed in me. I scraped up about $4,500. That was literally my last. And I had to tell my fiance, I'm like, I know we were supposed to go to her cousin's wedding around that time. I'm like, we're not going to the wedding. I'm putting this money into this commercial right now.
And then that's when you became single. No.
Very close.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, just give me 5 minutes. And in the next room, you just see a bag getting packed. You're like, what are you doing?
And hear the car drive off.
Yeah.
But she understood it. Literally, like I threw it together. We shot at DC Studios, where they have an amazing soundstage. I got my closest friends, like 20 of my closest friends, begged them all to come because I need extras so it looks like a full show. Got everyone to get dressed up. I'm like, no, you can't come in casual. You just black tie. You got to come dressed up. Went through that whole thing, set it up. The day before we shot it, I nearly had a nervous breakdown. I'm like, oh my God, we just spent our last. I don't know if I should be doing this. Literally, I almost fainted the night before we were shooting because I'm like just freaking out over anxiety. And I was so worried about this. Maybe this isn't the right thing to do. Shot the commercial. I waited about two months after we shot because Charlton went on vacation. So I had to just kind of just shut up and wait. He's like, bro, you're not paying me my rate, brother. It'll be done when it's done.
Yeah.
When it was done, he showed it to me. I was like, my mouth hit the floor. I was like, wow. This looks really good. Like I did New Edition, If It Isn't Love. I did Boys to Men, End of the Road. And I did Tony, Feels Good. I've never seen anyone cover Tony, Feels Good. So I'm like, that was why I did that. Cause I'm like, people don't remember in the 90s how big these songs were. But as soon as they hear it, it's gonna remind them like, yo, I used to love that. I've never heard this song covered type of thing. So when you put it all together and I saw it, I'm like, wow. Like, it actually shocked me. My fiance was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be something. This is going to work. Like, we got to pitch this in Vegas. We got to pitch this in Miami. We got to get on this. So I posted a couple pictures on social media, and that was when a rep from Aqua Supper Club randomly, just literally, we shot the commercial in October, and I got a message in December of last year. Like, yo, I saw you're posting, you know, this stuff. And I just put random 90s songs behind the photo because I didn't want to show too much of the commercial yet. Yeah. And they're like, yo, you know, what are you working on? I'm like, can I kind of explain the idea? And they loved it. They're like, you know what? We at Aqua Supper Club, we're like trying to get more people into our place right now. It's a newly renovated place. Showed me the place. And like, it has this amazing runway that goes through the middle of the restaurant with like booths attached to it. So it's almost like I could walk on the runway, immerse and be immersive in the crowd, be right there, like over them. I'm like, yeah, the show, like I want this to be immersive. And, you know, I think this could work. And we went there, saw the place, and the opening night, I didn't know what was going to happen. February 15th was our opening. The weather was so nice before that day. It was getting sunny. Yeah. It was so, I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to be perfect. People are going to come out. And I start to check the weather and they're like, February 15th, the one day we're going to be having a snowstorm on February 15th.
Yeah.
I'm like, got to be kidding me right now. Like, you, like everything's working against me. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So whatever, we still went ahead. We promoted for about a month and a half. And by the time February 15th came, we're like, okay, we're here. Let's just launch this. I pulled together the dancers. The commercial, which is how I got the band, which was my favorite band that I've ever heard in Toronto, The Recipe. They're the best gospel band I've ever heard. Apostolic Pentecostal church bands are literally the most soulful bands you'll ever hear. So when I pitched them the idea, they actually came to the commercial shoot. I didn't think they were going to come. I pitched to them. I didn't know if they're going to make it. I set up everything for them to be there. They happened to just happen to show up. I didn't know how or what was going to happen. They showed up, and it was on the set that I convinced them of what this could be. So this is before we had any offer of any residency. So now come full circle, when we got the first offer for February 15th, they were on board, but they were still kind of like, you know, hopefully this works through, we'll see what happens, blah, blah, blah. And they were getting paid the minimum of what they've ever gotten. It was a but it was enough for them to do it. So the 15th comes around, it's a snow day, it snows in the morning, I'm promoting, posting all day, like, oh, the weather's saying it's gonna clear up, guys, like, come on out, like, I promise it's gonna be worth it, blah, blah, blah. Saving grace was that it was Valentine's weekend, family day weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
So we got there. The show was supposed to start around 7:15. We're sitting there in the backstage, like it's place still empty. At 7, it's still empty. 7:15, it's still empty. I'm like, oh my God. Like maybe everything in my mind was, you know, maybe it's true. Maybe this isn't gonna work. Maybe, you know, this is just a waste of my time, whatever. And they kept saying, okay, Drew, you know, are you going to start the show? I'm like, I'm not starting the show for nobody, guys. I'm going to start when some people come in. Like, let's just wait a bit. Yeah. 7:15, 7:20, 7:30, 7:35, people start coming in, right? They're like, okay, Drew, we need you on stage. I'm like, I'm not going on stage. Give me till 8 o'clock. I'll go on at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
7:45, the place starts filling up, bro. The tables start filling up. It was like a miracle. I don't know what the hell happened. The table starts filling up. My first song I was doing on Luther Vandross, Never Too Much. I start from the 70s and I go all the way to the early 2000s.
Okay.
I come out first, like first the band starts and then I come out and I walk down the runway from the back of the restaurant down to the stage. And the place just erupted with this applause, like almost like they were waiting for something like this. And I started Luther Vandross. And it just, like the opening night was like a dream, man. It turned out so good. The turnout was amazing. All the tables were sold out on a snow night, you know? And it's like, I was like, that kind of confirmed it for me. Like, okay, I think we got something here. And then the owner basically was so happy that he told me he wants to extend it through the spring. Yeah, man, we're giving people this Las Vegas style show dining experience that has never happened in the city before. And the feedback has been amazing. And yeah, bro, that's where we're at now. So next Thursday, we're doing this every Thursday through spring. It may continue through the summer. After taking a step out of the industry and seeing how the music was and how the industry is going and streaming and all this crap that is the music industry right now, I feel like I've created my own lane that I can now, you know, still do what I love and actually make some money and pay bills and, you know, start something new for the city.
Do you, like, you know, when you said you're going like 70s, 80s, 90s, like, or 2000s, do you sometimes, like, you know, through your own selfishness, sometimes be like, I'm gonna play a Drew song?
Oh,
definitely. And then there's like, oh, yeah, I think I heard this and that guy does look familiar. And then you're just like, it's me, man. It's me.
Yeah. Like we actually end the show. At first I wasn't gonna put any of my songs in the show.
Yeah, no, like you wanna make it sound like, you know, listen, I'm just here for the music. And then sometimes and then you get like your ego like, I can do it. God damn, yeah, well, you know,
it wasn't even me to tell you the truth. It was the band. So when we were doing all the rehearsals, it was the band. It was like, Drew, like, why don't you throw in some of your songs? I'm like, I don't know if it'll make sense, you know, to throw in a Drew song after an Usher song. You know, I don't know if the people will remember. Like I was very in my own head about it. And it's crazy because the two last songs in the set turned out to be my originals, my song Runnin', which is one of my biggest songs. And the response was amazing. Like I could have never thought it would have turned out this way, but Runnin' as the finale song, now, even now, 2 weeks in, it's had the best response. Live, that song just has a different vibe to it, I guess. I don't know, but people really reacted. They're up dancing. Like, that's what I love about it, too. Everyone's up and dancing. You know, I come off stage. I perform in the audience. Me and the dancers will come down and break into a routine in the crowd. You know, I'll have the bass player or the electric guitar player walk out onto the runway with his cordless electric guitar playing in people's faces. Like, it's really immersive. You know, it's something that I haven't seen. Like, it's something I would want to go see. So I'm just happy that we could create something like this for the city.
Absolutely. I want to kind of close it off with like we'll do a random game of questions. To start the game here of random questions, in a scale from 1 to 5, how afraid of the dark are you? Like me? I'm about 3.5.
You know what? It depends where I am.
Okay.
Right? It depends on where I am. If I'm in a, like, I will not go swimming at night. I will not go in a beach at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm not swimming in no dark waters where I can't see what's underneath me. That is not happening. I'm probably at a 5 when it comes to that. You cannot get me on the beach in the dark. Hell no. If I'm in my house, if I'm in my basement or whatever, and you know, we get a blackout, I'll be okay. I'll be all right. But if I'm in a new type of place or where I'm unsure of what are my surroundings, I would say I'm about 4.5 to a 5.
I go with 3 or like a 3.5 just based on this fact of, like, I remember the first year I was at university, I lived with my brother in a townhouse, and he went to hockey a lot because he's like a referee. So, like, you know, you're there by yourself. And I don't know if you ever had, I don't know what it's called. It's like sleep apnea, or it's like a coma when you sleep, but like you're awake, but the rest of your body's like asleep. So,
right.
And like sometimes it's like a combination of seeing things like deja vu, or you see things like in the future and then it happens. So, like, I was there, like, I went, came home from school, was like napping. And it's like, it was light when I took a nap, but now it's dark. And my eyes were awake, and I was like, I dreamt that I had a text from a friend, and then like my phone was over here, and then it went off. And then I was like, that's probably that text. Like, oh, I'm seeing the future, but like the rest of my body couldn't move.
Wow. And then, I've heard about this. And then
it was still a dream, because then next minute, all I know was like an alligator came in and started trying to like munch on my leg. And I'm trying to like fight off the alligator, but I can't move. So then I'm just like, And I know what's happening, so I'm just trying to yell out to somebody like, help, but like nothing. It's just your eyes are awake, your brain's there. And I was like, that's why 4.5. Like, well, 3 to 3. Yeah. So that's why anytime it's like dark out, I'm just like, somebody here? Okay. you're close by? Okay, that's good. The second one they have here is, what's the dumbest thing you've ever cried about?
The dumbest thing I've ever cried about. That's a good question.
I think it's Cory and Topanga. It's definitely like a TV show where it's just like,
maybe it was a movie or something, like someone's dog died or something, or something like that.
I used to watch like the end of Boy Meets World before I started school. Like, it'd be like at the summer started and then the conclusion of summer. And I remember like that very last season. And I mean, like, listen, I don't have a problem with it. Like, maybe some people think it's dumb, but it's just like that last scene where they go back and Corey's just like telling Mr. Feeney, it's like, no, you'll always be with us. You'll always be with us no matter where we go. Okay. And then like they leave. And then Mr. Feeney finally says, it's like, I love all of you. It's just like, oh man, it's like, no teacher's ever said that to me. They were more or less like, get the hell out of here, Tobin. It's summer. Go enjoy yourself.
Yeah. That's hilarious, bro. Yeah, no, I can't even say. I can't really think of anything for that. I'm gonna have to pass.
Oh yeah, just leave me high and dry. Okay, okay.
Sorry, brother.
What would you do if you were the lone survivor of a plane crash?
Wow. What would I do? Like, what? As in?
I guess this is. Yeah, like immediately. I guess I don't know. You can interpret it another way. The way that I read it is more or less like, if I'm the lone survivor of a plane crash, I'm tweeting. I'm immediately going to tweet and be like, yo,
if your plane just went down. If your phone survived.
true. I just probably send out, like, find something and just be like, yo, plane SOS. Went down and I'm still here.
Yeah. I probably, like, I don't know, what's that movie? Depending on where you landed, right? They started eating, like, bodies and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
I probably start thinking about survival. Like, okay, where did we land? How am I surviving?
Yeah, there you go. There's the landscape of a different generation. One would be on trying to find the phone servers and be like, yo, how do I let people know I'm a... And the other person's like, yo, dig into this guy's arm over here. We have to try to figure out where to survive.
You got to eat. Let's find some fire and cook some human meat.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do you like it rare? What kind of... I'm just like, dude, you're asking me if I like... I've never had human bone. What are you talking about?
Yeah, how would I know?
Yeah, how would I know? Well, this is the experiment.
That's going to do it for this episode of Tobin Tonight. Our thanks to Drew for coming on to the show. Remember, you can find past, present, and future episodes on TobinTonight.com, Spotify, and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and leave a comment or two. For Tobin and myself, this is Jacob saying thank you for listening and good night.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.